Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado. No wonder Chevy Silverado is the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Steve Bertrand. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. So we had a slightly different show planned yesterday when the world looked a little bit different than it does today. I want to open up the phone lines. I was going to do an Ask Me Anything anyway today. I thought it was going to be about money, but we've decided to open up the phone lines, 312-981-7200, and you can call or text to talk about Dallas, to talk about anything. I want to talk a little bit about my experiences last week. We've already had a bunch of texts into the show, into 312-981-7200. I'm going to read some of those as well. And if you call in and you want to talk about that, great. Again, if you want to talk about money, there is so much going on with money, from the jobs report to just mortgage interest rates hitting basically the all-time low. So right now at noon, there is an interfaith ceremony going on in downtown Dallas, and a huge crowd has gathered. If you have, like we do and here in the studio, WGN-TV flipped on, they're showing a KTVT feed of people who are around what looks like a really interesting circular monument, and that is Thanksgiving Square. I walked by that no fewer than I must have been 15, 20 times last week. So last week I was in Dallas, coincidentally, of course, for the boys' youth volleyball nationals, basically junior Olympics for nationals. My younger son, Michael, who just graduated from high school, his club team was competing, and they wound up 10th in the nation, which is amazing. But we were staying at the Marriott City Center, which is right downtown, and we walked across Thanksgiving Square, where this interfaith ceremony is taking place right now, to and from the convention center, which means that we also went right by where the shooting happened. And on my Twitter feed at Glink, I put up an image, kind of blurry, sorry about that, we're trying to find a better one, that I took at sunset last week, I think it was actually Friday night, of the Dallas Fed, which, you know, was, we were off of, coming off of Main Street from the convention center, and we took a right, and there's the Fed. And like all Federal Reserve buildings, including our one here in very own Chicago, they're usually big, imposing, limestone-y kind of structures. They look and say government all over them, and they look really permanent. It's a, you know, the Federal Reserve is such a big part of who we are in this country from a monetary point of view. Anyway, I put up that photo on Twitter on my @Glink account. But I have to tell you that when I got home last night, Sam and I were at a dinner with some friends, and then I got a text from a guy who lives in Dallas who I spoke to and saw last week at our hotel, and spent some time walking around with. He said, hey, turn on your television if you're not already looking. Can you believe this is where you were last week? And I flipped on the TV, and I just couldn't even believe it. Sam and I were looking at this thing, saying we may have walked past the spot, you know, 10 or 15 times on our way from the hotel to the convention center and back. Because even though it was 99 degrees last week in Dallas, we're walkers. We like to walk around. So that's what we were doing. But I have to say, it really hit me hard as I was watching the scene of crisis and these incredible police officers and a DART officer who also was killed. DART is the Dallas Light Rail System. So you may be hearing about a DART officer on the news. That's their light rail system. It's kind of equivalent to the L, except that it's lighter rail than that. And it's on the ground. You hop on, hop off, all around the downtown area. It doesn't go out as far. I was saying this the other day on the air, that their transportation system doesn't do what ours does and take you all the way out to, hey, you can go to Waukegan if you want, or all the way down. It's very limited in scope, this part of their public transportation system. But you do hop on and hop off, and if you want to go from the city center, which is this kind of a mall, over to the convention center, it takes you about 10 minutes, and you're on the light rail. And they have DART officials who can come on the light rail system, and they check your phone because this is the only way to pay, or they check to see if you have a ticket, and then they get off again. Everybody seems to be armed in Dallas. I didn't realize this when you're walking around. Maybe this guy was or wasn't, but the loss of life is huge and upsetting. And in a state like Illinois, where we don't have open carry, when you go to somewhere that does have open carry, it's very scary to see people with like huge assault rifles. Sometimes people wear these and they just go out to Walmart. It's kind of hard to even comprehend. I find this to be personally scary. I'm not a gun owner. I think we all have too many guns. And I think this loss of life is tragic. So anyway, Micah Johnson, I want to read some of these texts because I think that they are pretty relevant to what we're talking about. And if you want to add your voice to this, 312-981-7200, you can text or you can call us in. So somebody texted and said, why aren't we told the race of the person who shot the policeman in St. Louis? Had the policeman shot the gunman, we'd know right away. I don't know that there are any
answers. I don't think we know that yet. It's just happening, and so I think it's just too soon. I mean, literally, this just happened within the past 30 minutes or so, so I just think it's too soon for details at this point.
Yeah, Kim, I think that the, again, it's hard to know this stuff in real time. I wonder if maybe you can speak to, maybe we can talk for a moment about just the news gathering process, because it doesn't happen quite in real time. I know people with Facebook Live think that everything now, in Periscope, think that everything now happens in real time.
Right, and a lot of times we do see things on Twitter, but, you know, we just don't go with it right away. If it's just one tweet, we have to confirm and make sure that what we're seeing is actually truth, and we want to make sure that we get the right information out rather than just, you know, going with the first thing that we see. So,
right. There's a difference in news gathering, right? We want to confirm. We
right.
don't want to get out bad information.
Exactly.
Or even if it might be right, we want to confirm it for sure. Another text that came in said nobody should be shooting anybody black or white. There's a circus clown. But when the police act like armed Wild West bullies, this is what's going to happen. And we had to go to a body camera to make them accountable, yet we still have this happen. My father was a police officer, but I've lost a lot of respect for what's happening with the police. And I'm thankful not to be raising a black young man in today's world. I feel like the whole world has gone crazy. Me too. I don't even know what to say about that. Me too. All right, 312-981-7200. We're going to take more of your calls. If you want to text in, that's fine. Coming up in a couple of minutes, Alex Bloomberg, who's CEO of Gimlet Media, he's a former producer of This American Life, co-founder of Planet Money, is going to be in the studio. We're going to talk to him about the voices in this world, both in podcast and in This American Life. So stay tuned for that. Welcome back, everybody, to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink. You can follow me on Twitter at Glink. We're talking a little bit more about Dallas, and then we're going to have Alex Bloomberg, CEO of Gimlet Media, former producer of This American Life, and co-founder of Planet Money, in for the second half hour to talk about all kinds of things, the voices and the voices of America. All right, 312-981-7200. This is an Ask Me Anything, folks. So for those of you who wanted to talk about mortgage interest rates, the lines are open for that, as well as talking about Dallas. I know that's kind of a disparity. It's hard to imagine that in a single day we can go from something as really wonderful as being able to save tens of thousands of dollars on your mortgage all the way to the loss, tragic loss, of five lives of officers and this gunman who clearly I don't even know what to say. Insane. I want to go back and read some more of these texts. We had somebody text that. Oh, I just lost that one. Let me go down a little bit. People aren't walking around with assault rifles. Assault rifles are illegal to the general public. Okay. I'm not sure if that's true or that's not true. I think assault weapons are legal because it's a little bit less specific. Maybe assault rifles are illegal to the general public. I have seen people carrying, and I am not a gun owner, so what looked to be like large, crazy, dramatic weapons. Here's another text. It's cause and effect. If anyone complies with a police officer command, it would be much better for all concerned. It's the people who do not listen to the police that causes people to be shot. If a police officer tells me to stop and raise my hands, I do it. I'm not a cop, but they have an extremely difficult job. I think that is true. I think that the police have an increasingly difficult job. And it's kind of interesting. We did think that body cameras would be the answer to this. And I guess the answer is it's not an answer. There's got to be a multiple side solution to the problem of too many guns falling into the wrong hands and people pulling them out at the wrong time. And I don't know in a peaceful march why anybody would bring a gun to that. And clearly this guy planned it and thought about that. And it's just distressing. Another text. Hey, Congress, don't worry about Newtown or Dallas, but make sure you get to the bottom of Clinton's emails. Thank you. Thank you for keeping us real politically today. And finally, please, if you can't use the correct terminology for what you saw when you were in Texas, you would be better off to just say weapons. So noted. I saw weapons. 1225, let's make that 1226 on WGN Radio, 312-981-7200. So we're going to have Alex Bloomberg here to talk about money and voices. He's the CEO of Gimlet Media, the former producer of This American Life. Before we jump to a break, I did just want to talk a little bit about what happened with mortgage interest rates. So after the show this week, when we were talking about how mortgage interest rates were falling to the very lowest levels, basically in history, we are a tenth of a percent away from the all-time record low of November of 2012, which is 3.31% for a 30-year fixed. Right now we're at 3.41 officially from Freddie Mac, which is a secondary mortgage market leader. And I got three or four or five emails from people asking if they should refinance. One person is selling in the next year. One person just refinanced, wants to know if they should refinance again. I want to go through just quickly my four rules for a home run refinance. And this works if you can pass these four tests. Yes, you should refinance. So number one, can you lower your interest rate? That's number one. Number two, can you shorten the loan term? Can you shorten your loan term? Number three, can you lower the amount you're paying each month? Right? So can you lower the interest rate? Can you shorten the loan term? Can you lower the payment you're making each month? And number four, can you effectively manage the costs of the refinance? If you get all four of those, if you can check those four boxes, that's a home run refinance. You don't have to ask anybody. Just go ahead and do it. Pull the trigger. Don't wait for next week thinking they'll be even lower than they are today. Who knows where interest rates will go tomorrow. So if you see a good rate and you meet those four criteria, go ahead and refinance. You go ahead. It's a great deal. What if you can only do one, two, or three of the four? Well, it may still be worth it. So you should think about it and try to figure out if you're going to be saving money. The point is, if you can shorten your loan term, that is typically the number one thing that you should be doing, because that's where you're going to save the biggest amount of money. 312-981-7200. Let's take a quick call before the break. Julie, what's on your mind?
Hi.
Go ahead.
Probably. I'll make it back here. get us back. You know, this whole thing that's going on this whole week, well, 2 weeks, all this mess that's happening all over our country, all over our world. We need to get the guns off the streets, okay? I just need to focus on, instead of President, Hillary Clinton's email, stop working with the NRA and get the guns off the streets, because now we've got the nuts running around killing police officers, five of them dead. It's ridiculous, okay? Then you got the day before, this horrible thing that happened in Baton Rouge with this kid, this father gets killed, and the mother and the son are on the TV the next day, and the little boy is 15 years old, completely breaks down. I break down watching them, thinking, oh my God. And then I'm from Minneapolis, and this doesn't happen in Minneapolis. The guy gets pulled over because he has a thing out in his light, in his back, in his signal light out, and they pull him over. And it's like, what the hell is happening with our country? It's like, ever since President Obama became president, it's like we've all turned into a bunch of freaky... I'm sorry.
You know, Julie, it's sad, but actually it has been happening for a lot longer since just this last 8 years. I hate to say it, but we've been going in this direction for a long time. But you're right about one thing. We got to get the guns and we got to get them off the street. It's 1229 on WGN Radio. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Steve Bertrand. Steve will be back from his European sojourn on Monday, is my understanding, so you'll get a chance to hear him then. You can always find me online at Glink on Twitter or thinklink.com if you'd like to ask me a question about money. But we have a very special treat. Alex Blumberg is in the studio. He's CEO of Gimlet Media, but you might know him better as the former producer of This American Life and co-founder of Planet Money, something I'm a big fan of, by the way. Welcome.
Thanks very much. It's great to be here, Elise.
It's really great to have you. And so we were just talking in the break that you started out at our very own WBEZ.
I did. I started back in 1997. I was an administrative assistant for Ira Glass at This American Life.
Hey, listen, the best people start out as admins. I was. It's exactly. A great job to have.
It's a great job, and it taught me a lot. I mean, it set me on the career path that I'm on today,
which is really amazing. All right, so tell us a little bit about that. How did you went off with Ira, and you kind of grew and became co-producer?
Yeah. So the way it worked at This American Life, there was a small group of us producers. And you know, producer is a funny word. It's like manager. It can mean anything, you know.
Especially in Hollywood.
Yeah, exactly. and in radio, when we talk about producer, it's a very different. We mean it's something very different than you mean in Hollywood or other places. But it's so basically, and at This American Life, what that meant was simply we did the stories. You know, we found the guests, we went out and collected the tape, we helped other people, we helped other reporters go and do it. So it was just sort of like this. The way I refer to it now is sort of a narrative audio boot camp, because you're working with this guy, Ira Glass, who's just sort of helped invent the form and is one of the few people I met who I would consider actually like a true genius.
Yeah, he's pretty amazing.
He's amazing
at what he's done.
Yeah, and a visionary. And so just learning, you know, just sort of being able to work there and learn all those skills and absorb all that was just really thrilling.
And so why did you leave?
Why did I leave? Well, I saw it was with great reluctance. I left because I was sort of like in a friendly way strong-armed by my friend Adam Davidson.
Oh, Planet Money man.
So Adam and I had done this big hour-long story on This American Life called The Giant Pool of Money, which was in 2008, and it was a big hour on the housing bubble and the housing crisis.
Sure.
But it came out in 2008, and it came out in like this weird time. It came out right after sort of the first dominoes were starting to fall, but the world hadn't gone off the rails.
So were you June and July, or were you October?
I think it was April of 2008.
Oh, even sooner.
So it was right after that first Bear Stearns fund had imploded, but it was before Lehman Brothers, it was before Fannie and Freddie, it was before everything like that.
Right.
So, but at the time, but we'd been so deep inside it, we'd been following it forever, and we'd sort of seen all sorts of horrible things happening in the subprime housing market, and we thought maybe we were late, maybe the story was over, but I was like, no, we should do it anyway. So we did this thing,
and it
turned out that, and we were nervous about it because it's essentially an hour on mortgage finance, you know? But we were able to make it sort of fun and interesting and sort of reveal the system behind it. And so, and it became very, very, one of our most popular programs to date. And so Adam was like, We've unlocked something here. We can take these same narrative techniques and apply them to money and finance, and there's a whole other audience. And I was like, there is not. Nobody will do that. And he was like, I think we should try. And so he sort of coaxed me very gently out of my comfortable sort of position at This American Life. And I started working there one day a week and then several days a week. And then things went off the rails, and it just became clear, like, oh, this is the biggest story of my lifetime, and Planet Money is the vehicle to tell that story.
So as a money reporter, and I was working, I had my own radio talk show at a big station in Atlanta called WSB. Week in, week out on Sunday mornings, I would tell the story during the housing crisis of what happened between the market closing on Friday and the Asia markets opening on Sunday afternoon.
Right.
And there was a lot that happened every single weekend. And I would start my show on Sunday morning and say, oh my gosh, you would not believe what happened in the last 48 hours. And I would have written out a list of maybe 10 life-altering, market-altering, money-altering things that had happened. And there were so many stories sort of tied up. And my job was to answer the questions of everybody going, now what just happened?
Yeah.
And how is my wallet affected?
Yeah.
But I would listen to your stuff and I would, you know, watch Planet Money, listen to Planet Money and think about Adam and what you guys were doing. And I just thought your approach was so good.
Well, it was, I mean, that's what we were trying to do is connect, you know, behind something. So you'd be talking to all these money people and they'd be like, sometimes they don't get very emotional, but every once in a while they would get emotional. They'd be like, interest rates moved a whole percentage point or whatever, you know?
And you'd be like,
can you believe it?
Right.
And then to average people, they're like, I don't understand why that's dramatic at all. And so what we would have to go is go behind that and see, no, this is why it's dramatic. When interest rates move that much, that means that like a whole bunch of people got suddenly very, very panicked about this thing or that thing, or the world changed in front of them in a very dramatic way. And you have to reveal that. But it's like, it became like, I sort of likened it to, it's sort of like we were doing sports reporting to a world that had no idea the rules of any of the games we were talking about.
I've often said that real estate is the world's greatest spectator sport. Uh-huh. It's just that everybody in sports doesn't know that.
Right.
But I think what happened in the housing crisis became sort of not just the spectator sport of real estate, but it became sort of the larger money spectator sport as well. And we all felt it very painfully. The ticket price, the entry price for admission was very painful.
Very painful. But it's one of those things, I remember around that time somebody talked to me about, like, at that point, you know, sort of, it always takes a financial crisis for new little terms of financial literacy to enter the general population. And so for a long time, I didn't know this, but like back in the 60s, apparently, most people didn't know what the word interest rate even meant.
Oh,
and
sure.
And it wasn't until the inflation in the 70s and then the Fed movement, and, you know, sort of, and that recession that was brought on by trying to control inflation, that term entered the popular lexicon.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting also because there used to be a time before credit cards and credit scores and credit karma.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Just, there was a land before, and, you know, it's not
you
even,
had to have actual money to actually purchase this.
Yeah, or a checkbook.
Yeah.
Do you remember a checkbook? My kids don't know anything about checkbooks. They don't know that you have to go to a bank to actually deposit checks. They think you can just take a picture. Oh, wait, you can.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a short break. Will you stick around, and we'll talk a little bit more about podcast moving, because I understand you're giving the
keynote. Yeah.
That's great. What time is that?
I think it's 4:15 or 4:30.
Oh, good. So you have time to chat.
Yeah.
All right. Stay tuned. This is Elise Glenk. I'm sitting here with Alex Bloomberg, and we'll be right back with a few more tidbits on podcast on WGN Radio. It's 12:51. I'm Elise Glenk. I'm sitting in for Steve Bertrand. It's been a fun week. So glad that you've been able to join me. So we started the week talking about podcast movement, which has been in town all week and celebrating the podcast movement, which is a new thing. Alex Bloomberg is here with me. He is the CEO of Gimlet Media. We haven't talked about what that is yet, but you are giving the keynote address at Podcast Movement today.
I am giving the keynote address. Yes, that's
what are you going to talk about?
Well, I'm going to talk about just where we are in this phase of podcasting. So I started Gimlet Media a little less than 2 years ago. I left my job at Planet Money and started because I'd seen what had happened.
Is that the official end of the housing crisis? Because you've started with it and now you've ended. Where is it? Well, okay, never mind.
No.
Go ahead.
I was seeing what was happening. So Planet Money, because there was a big question, like after the housing crisis, sort of after the effects, after it's not as acute, will people still want to tune into Planet Money? And it was, and the answer was yes. Like the audiences continued to grow. It continued to become a thing. It got bigger and bigger and bigger. Same thing was happening with This American Life. All the other sort of like independent podcasts like this 99% Invisible. I was seeing this happen all around me, and I thought there's a big opportunity here. There can be more. If we can take these storytelling techniques and apply them to money and finance, what can't we apply them to? What else is out there? So I decided to start a company to do it. So that company became Gimlet Media. Our first podcasts was a podcast about the starting of that company. It was called Startup. And I ended up just recording all the conversations I had with investors, with my wife, as we were sort of like deciding whether to do it, deciding whether to quit my job. Cause it's a big deal, you know, to quit your job.
And it's a huge risk. I mean, this is not a small, I've just started up a company myself and it is, it's a massive undertaking.
It's a massive.
I feel a little overwhelmed all the time.
I've not stopped feeling overwhelmed. Yeah.
Right.
So we got up, we raised some money, we've hired some people. So now we have a couple podcasts out now, Reply All, surprisingly awesome, and Sampler, as well as Startup and Mystery Show, and they're all doing great. So that's been great. And then, and so what I'm going to talk about is like where we are in this, in right now, in this moment in podcasting. And I sort of, my big takeaway, I think, is sort of we're at the second, we're at the dawn of a second golden age of audio. So if you think of the first golden age as radio in the 30s and 40s and like all the big names, Groucho Marx, you know, Bob Hope, like Orson Welles, they all got their start in radio.
I remember the CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And and all the big companies, you know, all start NBC, CBS, ABC. They all started as radio broadcasters. And that was there was this flowering of stuff. And then TV came along and sort of everybody went there. But now we have on demand audio. So what that means is that now you can listen to whatever you want to whenever you want. So during your commute, during your workout, during your errands, running your errands. And that has sort of brought about this new flowering of what's possible. And we see that obviously with Serial. We see that with Startup. It was an episodic thing that wouldn't have been possible before this. So I think we're just at the beginning. I think we've only begun to see what's possible.
So for people out there thinking that everybody used to say, oh, I could be on the radio or I could be on TV. And the answer was no, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Can everybody do a podcast? And would anybody want to listen to them? Because as I said to you earlier, you know, it's about, I'm where in my podcast, Monday Morning Marketing, sort of where I am with my Instagram account, which is to say, it's good stuff. Not a lot of people know about it. So give us a few tips on how people can elevate that.
Well, so I think there's like, everybody can do a podcast just the same way everybody can shoot a video. Does that mean, so I think-
podcast, with your phone.
Yeah, podcasting is a funny word. Mm-hmm. And you can have a podcast like, I don't know, like Radiolab, which I know has a staff of like 10 and takes, many, many months to put together one episode because they've interviewed so many people. They're taking such craft. And then you can have a podcast that's like takes 45 minutes to produce and it's 45 minutes long. So and then there's everything in between. But I think with podcasting, the world of podcasting is a little bit like the world of video. You can have a video on YouTube that you just take with your camera and post, and you can have Game of Thrones, and they're both video, right? But nobody says, yes, do you watch video? They say, what shows do you watch? What movies do you see?
Yeah, what YouTube channel are you watching?
And I think podcasting is going to go that way. Like, it's not going to be like, do you listen to podcasts for much longer? I think it's going to be, which podcasts do you listen to and what? So yeah, anybody can do a podcast. Can anybody do a podcast that millions of people want to listen to? That's much harder. And that's where the craft comes in.
I think it is. And I think some of it is just luck. So I have a YouTube channel and we have almost 7 million video views, and one video has 2 million views all on its own.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we have 700 videos. They're all doing pretty well. Some are doing really, really well.
Yeah.
And then there's this one. And so you have interesting, it's a little bit of a microcosm of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Sometimes something just sparks an interest.
Absolutely.
Conversation starts. And because on the web, it's so easy to eavesdrop in everybody else's conversations, sometimes that just gets picked up.
Yeah. And I think there's definitely that, the sort of like trying to, the virality, like how do you tap into that? How do you tap into the sort of the public, the zeitgeist, you know? But I also think the other thing that's happening is like, what our approach is, we're trying to sort of like apply craft to the thing, you know, and sort of like take our time, really, really think hard about what we're doing and really sort of polish the shows that we put out. And with the hope being that if you take the time to sort of do something that feels special and that you can hear the work that's put into it, you'll be rewarded with listeners. So far, that's a bet that's paid off.
When are you no longer a startup? When do you end that podcast?
Well, so now we've switched the focus from ourselves to other companies.
Correct.
So we're,
right.
So yeah. So
it's always going to be startup
yeah,
nation.
There's always startups, right? Yeah, exactly. Let's hope so.
But for you.
For us, I would say we're still a startup. We're still like, we've still got a lot of, but we're in the growth phase.
Awesome. Yeah. Alex Bloomberg of Gimlet Media. Thanks so much. Where can people find out more about you?
Gimletmedia.com.
And then there they can listen to all the different podcasts.
Yeah. And I'm on Twitter @AbexLumberg.
Okay, we're going to take a picture and we're going to put it out and tag you, and then everybody will be able to figure that out. All right.
Great.
It is 12:58. I'm Elise Glink. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Stay tuned. Be right back in a moment with more WGN Radio.